Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan, imminent doom, Sachs. Ethan, pet build around of yours from back in the day.
Very much a pet build around of mine from back in the day. I actually just pulled up the list of one drops from Hour of Devastation in preparation to talk about my beloved Imminent Doom, which we will talk about in just a minute. I won't read the text of that card right now. But the reason Ben is introducing me as a card from Hour of Devastation is because we've got our March MTG Limited Madness bracket here to go over this week. And Imminent Doom plays a brief role, spoiler alert, in the bracket.
Brought to you by Capital One. We're raking in the millions doing this episode.
Is that right? Is that right?
That's right. It is, yeah. Some sponsorship work behind the scenes that you didn't know about.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that for sure. With the new house and baby on the way, I can use every penny. How are you doing, my friend? Spring break?
Spring break is officially donezo as of now, and it was not much of a spring break. I had the flu pretty severely. I ran a fever for 5 days straight, so not my favorite spring break, but Catherine and I did go to a local state park yesterday, which was nice, and I was thoroughly worn out after hiking a mile, but we did a little one-night getaway type deal, so there was a little bit of spring break in the break.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, I'm so bummed. I know you were, it was just coming on last week after you felt like you had staved it off until your body knew that you had a week to relax.
That's right.
And I'm sorry that you didn't really get to relax. It was mostly just repairing yourself from the flu. So yes, we are here. I think we teased this out a little bit. Maybe the last episode, two episodes ago, I forget. And we threw it up on the socials as well. But this was a Discord run March Madness bracket. And we'll go into sort of the inception of it, how the four regions are. And we're going to go over the results, what our votes cast were, all that good stuff. And it's basically just going to be an opportunity for us to talk about, you know, iconic cards of limited past, a sort of nostalgia trip episode, as we round things out before Strixhaven previews start next week.
They've already started, baby. Have you seen those new charms?
I've seen the charms. You want to talk about the charms?
We don't need to talk about the charms, no. I just the previews are underway. I'm excited. Except this is another guild set again. It's going to be brutal.
That's three in a row. Except, have you been privy to the "we totally blew it" Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles discourse? That this set is amazing and we should have stuck with it. And
wait, what discourse is this?
That's out there, baby. It's in the comments. It's in our Discord.
Really? I feel no regrets about skipping Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
People are telling us we're wrong.
Completely uninterested. Give me new mechanics and a new puzzle and I'm here for it. That felt like just recycled leftovers that I'd been eating for a week.
The one thing that I'm hoping will happen in Strixhaven is, I don't know, I mean, Sam Black's off on his, what is he on? CEDH path? Maybe he'll come back and he'll figure out what the secret sixth guild or sixth school from Strixhaven is.
We don't need Sam Black. We can do that ourselves, baby.
Well, I didn't do it last time, but yeah, maybe we'll do it ourselves. Maybe that's the challenge. What's the secret sixth school in Strixhaven? Yes, previews will start, or previews is what we're going to focus on next week. But for now, we've got our bracket. Let's talk about the aforementioned Discord via the Patreon, and then we'll get into our March Madness life. So the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. We have two really great perks over at the Patreon. One is access to our Discord, which is, we're going to be talking about our treasure hunt as well this week. But we've been doing some sweet community run stuff over at the Discord, in addition to our sort of normal, oeuvre of discussions of limited formats, which is going to kick up with Strixhaven. I guess this week as previews start to pour in, but preview time and new set time is a really fun time to be in the Discord, just talking about speculating on cards and what do we think the puzzle is going to be like. And then once the full spoiler is out, we run some practice drafts, people throw their tier lists up, all that good stuff. And the other thing we want to shout out is access to our podcast feed, where you get not only this episode a day early and ad free, but also access to our weekly bonus episode of Lords Unlimited. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, head on over to the Patreon page. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they joined. So this week we are welcoming Andrew, Toxic, and Drew. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough.
So we started a treasure hunt, by we, I mean one of our patrons and former podcast members, Jared, aka JMaz, has taken up the torch of the Lords of Limited treasure hunt for each set. And we wanted to wrap up the Lorwyn Eclipsed treasure hunt by shouting out the winners. And it's very fitting, I think, that the way this was structured was it was sort of 10 first to get to them achievements and then 3 rolling high score achievements. And I think it's very fitting that all 3 of the high score achievements were claimed by the treasure hunt or achievement goat from back in the day. I believe this is the artist formerly known as Generation D20, is Draft Diary, who got all 3 of our high scores, which were the most elves made with Morkin's eyes, 17, the highest mana value revealed off of Dreen Harvest, which was 10, and keeping the most creatures in play off of a winnowing, which was 11. So congratulations to Draft Diary for all 3 of those. He has 4 total achievements. We have Cold Brunate coming in with 2. And then Cullen, Silver 93, Stardust, Ged the Flayer, No Name, and Yoko, Thief of Lenin, as well as yours truly, all with 1. Ben, get on the board.
Hi, listen, I would love to get on board. I will try harder in the future. I'll do better.
And I will say that I got 11 mana value off of Dream Harvest, but it was denied because it was during early access. So
wow. Yeah. Where's the fine print?
Look, I have to obey by the rules even in my own Discord. So I'll just have to get better for next time. So congratulations to the treasure hunt winners. And if the treasure hunt like that sounds like fun to you, get in on the Discord. Head on over to the Patreon page. Let's talk about March Madness. So this began with a little seedling of an idea for me that I threw to you, and you took the mantle, you took the ball, you took the torch, whatever sports.
You passed me the ball, and I went up and dunked the ball. It.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we had some, there was some more assisting happening. I don't know if you that's a bit. I don't know.
We did give and go. We did a give and go. We were playing some pick and roll. I rolled, you picked, I passed the ball back to you. You ultimately put the ball in the hoop, for sure.
Well, and Jared, also the aforementioned helper of the, or runner of the achievement list, the treasure hunt, he really helped us out with structuring the final touches and the ordering of the brackets.
There you go. We were running the triangle offense from the Lakers back in the day.
There we go. Thank you. That's what I'm trying to hear here. We've got those LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh. Is that's the trio here?
That's the big 3. The triangle is like way older than those people. Triangle's like old school 90s basketball.
Can I get any kind? Your eyes didn't even light up as I rattled off.
Wait,
it's not
the Lakers. Wait, Triangle is the Bulls, names. Right? Triangle's the Bulls. You watched the Bulls documentary.
I watched the Bulls documentary.
You watched the Bulls documentary.
I'm sports balling. I'm bebopping and scatting all over the place. Okay, so I said to you, I was like, we should do a March Madness thing. That would be fun. And you were like, yeah, okay. And then you went off in your secret lab, and you came up with these 4 regions. Did you have anything else on the cutting room floor? Were these like your clear 4 categories?
But these were my clear 4. I mean, mine were not quite as clean as the final products. Mine were like bomb rares and mythic uncommons. You packaged it a little more neatly than I had it. But yes, these are essentially the 4 OG categories that I came up with.
And there is a little bit of category fraud. I think certainly if we do this again next year, which I think we might, because this was pretty fun to do, I want the categories cleaner. I think I'd want to make sure that things aren't like punching above or below their weight class in terms of their rarity. And I would also, I think, want to make sure that there's only 1 representative from a set, which I like generally tried to do, but wasn't so judicious about.
Sure. That makes sense.
So we're going to go, I think, through these brackets 1 at a time. So each package of 16, we'll go through 1 at a time rather than doing like the round of 64, or round of 32, because I think jumping around like that'll be a little too tough to clock. And I also think I want to just say as a caveat here, what's fun about something like this is that it sparks a lot of discussion of like, well, like, does this really belong? Is this really a this? Is it that? Like, obviously this is right. Obviously this is wrong. Just as a disclaimer, this is all clearly extremely subjective and like have all the opinions you want. But Like, we just threw a list together. So, you know, come at us, I guess. But that's what I want to say is, like, let's, people were getting bogged down in the, like, does this really belong on here? I'm like, yes, it does, because I put it there. Like, that's how this works.
We also have not said what the four categories are. We should say that, right, before we dive into them. So we've got the build around region. We've got bomb rares. We've got synergy commons. And then build around uncommons.
And I have a question for you about, like, you know, so we did do an effort of ranking them 1 through 16. And then, you know, having those brackets be appropriate, like we'll see the number one seed versus the number 16 seed. How often in things like this does the number one seed get upset? Does the number one seed not make it to the end?
I mean, it happens fairly often. The number one seeds have been upset in the first round before. Hmm. Fairly common for a one seed to go out, certainly in the round of 32, like Florida this year in the basketball tournament got upset. I had them winning the whole thing and my bracket got blown up in the round of 32.
I guess I more meant when it's like a list like this and not like...
Oh, live action.
I guess I recognize that a good team can lose to a worse team. But I'm curious about things where it's like, here's a ranking. And it's like, okay, well then I guess number one beats number 16, you know?
Well, if we do a good job ranking them, certainly there were upsets along the way, I think.
There certainly were. And we'll get into those as we go through and maybe divulge even what our own votes were cast for. So the build around region, the number one seed versus the number 16 seed. We have spider spawning as number one, which is the four and a green sorcery. Make a bunch of 1/2 spiders with reach equal to the number of creature cards in your graveyard. It has flashback for 6 and a black. First printed in OG Innistrad, has come back in some master sets and remastered sets since then. But that's where I'll always think of it as. Versus the, here it is, the titular card of the episode, the namesake card of the episode, Imminent Doom, which was an enchantment, a rare enchantment from Hour of Devastation, 2 and a red for an enchantment that basically had you chain up casting spells. So when you cast your first one drop, deal a damage to something, this ticks up to 2. Then when you cast your first two drop, deal 2 damage to something, ticks up to 3, so on and so forth.
Not really a close call. Spider spawning coming in with 91% of the vote.
Spider spawning is the, like, most iconic or earliest memory I have of a build around. And I like distinctly remember the episode of Brian David Marshall being on Limited LR. Resources, talking about this, referring to it as like the double Becker or whatever, then once people knew about this deck, there was this leveling war of like putting 41 cards in your deck, 42 cards in your deck, just sort of the never decking. And we had a question in our Discord about like someone who I think hadn't played in this set of like, well, is spider spawning really like, is it really a build around? Do you not just put it in a deck with 16 creatures? And the answer is largely no, at least for original Innistrad. Like green, black with spider spawning and a bunch of creatures wasn't really the deck. Spider spawning was part of this package of, I think, about 3 other cards. There was a card called Memory's Journey that had flashback that let you shuffle in 3 cards from your deck. And then there was a card called Runic Repetition that let you grab an exiled card with flashback and put it into your hand. And then there was also a card called Gnaw the Bone. Is that right?
Gnaw the Bone, yeah.
That was the life gain card, gain you 2 life for each creature card in your graveyard and had flashback as well. And so when you had all 4 of those cards, all you had to do was just not die and you would never lose because you could, you know, make infinite spiders. Runic Repetition would let you grab whatever flashbacked exiled spell you wanted. Then Memory's Journey let you shuffle back in Runic Repetition into your deck, rinse, repeat. The only enemy, the only way you lost was the MTGO clock.
It was a fantastic deck. I lost lots of tickets back in the day trying to do it. And then when you did it, you felt like a god and you immediately re-wrecked and tried again. It's awesome.
Imminent Doom, less iconic, I would say.
I think iconic to our podcast.
Iconic to our podcast. One of the original, I mean, Hour of Devastation was our first set that we did. That was like our, you know, first episode was our chef set review, our Yelp 5-star set review of Hour of Devastation. And Imminent Doom was one of the early, like, ooh, Ethan's in the kitchen. Ethan's got some stuff. I've just pulled it. Like I said, I pulled up the one drops and the way you had to fuel, it wasn't hard to fuel Imminent Doom once you got past one, because, you know, you're limited decks have a nice curve of 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever. Getting the one drops was tough. And so you had to know about, like, all right, Crash Through is in the set. That's the single red. Everything gets trample, draw a card. So having those cantrips were good. Traveler's Amulet was the sort of golden eggy card of one mana artifact. Pay one, sack it, find a basic land. Proven Combatant was a single mana 1/1 with Eternalize. So you had some tools of, like, all right, can I get 3 to 4 one drops in my deck? And then if you could, you could cook with Imminent Doom.
Yeah, but doesn't hold a candle to the goat that is Spider Spawning.
Yes, I also voted for Spider Spawning. I assume you did as well.
I did as well, yes. Which takes us on to our next matchup, which is the number 2 seed versus the number 15 seed.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Financial stress affects far more than our bank accounts. It can take a serious toll on mental health and relationships, with 88% of Americans feeling some form of financial stress at the start of 2026.
Money worries often bring anxiety, sleep disruption, and even depression, and are one of the leading sources of conflict for couples. This month, we want to normalize the emotional weight of financial stress and remind people that struggling with money doesn't mean failure. Sometimes it's just about accessing the right kind of support.
I am in the middle of perhaps the most financially stressful time of my life. House has been purchased, renovations are underway, we are prepping to move and list our own house, ideally before our second baby gets here, and that's before thinking about daycare costs. Therapy has helped me be able to get some perspective and not spiral around this precarious time.
With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and if you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recs.
When life feels overwhelming, therapy can help. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com/lords.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now, back to the show. Lich's Mastery. So the bath song is my boy. 3 in a blue, Saga, gives you double blue, draws 2 cards, discards 2 cards, loops your graveyard. I was always surprised every time you got 2 mana back. After the bath song popped off, like, what couldn't this card do? Versus Lich's Mastery, which is another one of your bad pet build arounds.
Yeah, you never really could. I think Imminent Doom was like good. Lich's Mastery was like, I'm just trying to feel something. This was 3 black for a legendary enchantment from original Dominaria. If you've played, like, Bolas's Citadel has sort of eclipsed this as the 3 triple black, you know, permanent that does stuff, but like Bolas's Citadel actually does stuff. It's, you know, present in Vintage Cube as well. But anyway, Lich's Mastery, 6 mana for a legendary enchantment with hexproof. It says you can't lose the game. And whenever you gain life, you draw that many cards. Whenever you lose life, for each 1 life you lost, you exile a permanent you control or a card from your hand or graveyard. And when Lich's Mastery leaves the battlefield, you lose the game. And so the way that this card worked was you needed life gain in your deck. Shout out to Navigator's Compass, the single mana artifact that filtered mana and gained 3 when it came into play. Man, we had to just scrap back in the day, didn't we?
There's such an argument over was Lich's Compass playable? And it was
Navigator's Compass, yeah.
Navigator's Compass, yeah. I think I went from firmly never put this card in your deck to loving it by the end of the format.
But the idea was, yeah, put life gain in your deck. And then try and time the landing of Lich's Mastery where you've hopefully used your life total as a resource enough until you slam Lich's Mastery and all of a sudden your life total doesn't matter and now it's about your resources. And if you gain life, you'll go up resources. If you're losing life, you obviously have to sacrifice permanents, discard cards, whatever. It was a fun puzzle to try and solve. But again, I think not quite a candle to Bathsong. Speaking of Bathsong, like, do you remember the tool? Like, were there tools like this? I'm talking about, like, okay, here are the tools you need for Spider Spawning and Imminent Doom and Lich's Mastery, which I think is a hallmark of a build around, is like, there's key support pieces. Do you recall what key support pieces were around for Bathsong?
I like Dilembus to be able to buffer the old life total. That was nice. You needed 2 bath songs, obviously, to be able to loop them together. And then it was just, it was usually based blue, white, and whatever, you know, spells that were removal spells that would go to the yard that you could shuffle back in, that sort of thing. It's very, very similar recipe to Dovin's Acuity.
And this is Bath Song emerging victorious, 71% to 29%. So goodbye to Lich's Mastery. Moving on, we have Dance of the Mance, as that can't be the number three. Oh, wow. The number three seed, Dance of the Man. It's pretty high up. That's X White Blue. This was from Throne of Eldraine. X White Blue for a rare sorcery. Return up to X. Target artifact and or non-aura enchantment cards, each with mana value X or less, from your graveyard to the battlefield. But if X is six or more, those permanents are 4/4 creatures in addition to their other types. And in Eldraine, there was an artifact and enchantment theme in White Blue. This is where Golden Egg, which will make an appearance later on in this episode, first emerged. You know, returning Golden Egg and whatever other trinkety artifacts or enchantments you had, like Witching Well, back. So just, and the nice thing about cards like Witching Well or Golden Egg is they dig, right? So it does the thing where you're like, I have this build around, I have cards that dig towards that build around, and they're also helpful once I hit that build around because I want them in my graveyard by that time.
Yeah, and I think this was a pretty undervalued archetype as well. Like, you could pretty reliably get a pack two, pick one, pack two, pick two, Dance of the Mans, and jump ship and still pretty reliably get there on it. And like you said, because those things dug towards Dance of the Mans. Now, did you do a bunch of stuff sometimes and then do nothing and lose? Ultimately, yes. But if you ever found Dance of the Mans and cast it for X equals six, was that the requisite number? No.
X equals six, yeah.
No, it was X equals five, right? It was seven mana total?
X equals six.
X equals six? You had to do eight mana for this?
Eight mana, baby.
Oof. Yeah, I guess if you did the thing, it was really good.
It was a different time. Okay, so we have this versus another one of your pets, Sorceress's Schemes.
Yeah, coming in at the 14 seed. I hated seeing this one. Two of my babies going against each other early.
Yeah.
Sorceress's Schemes, three and a red sorcery. Return an instant or sorcery card from your graveyard or exiled card with flashback you own to your hand. It adds a red mana, so you get a rebate. It's got flashback for four and a red. This is another loops thing. So you have your two Sorceress's Schemes and you can keep buying the one back and very, very slowly get some card advantage.
Yeah, I was on the wrong side of history here. I also should say I was on the wrong side of history with Bat Song versus Lich's Mastery. I did still vote for Lich's Mastery.
Did you really?
I did. But here for Dance of the Mans versus Sorceress's Schemes, we have one of our closest races, and surprise, we see lots of close races in this, but one of our, you don't often see close races in the first round. This is a 49% to 51% vote, with Sorceress's Schemes just barely edging it out.
That is nuts. I don't remember how I voted for this because I love both of these cards. Let me scroll back up here.
I assume you voted for Sorceress's Schemes.
I assume I voted for Dance of the Mans. I love Dance of the Mans.
Wow.
I voted for Dance of the Mans.
You had a thought that maybe our votes should count for more. Do you think if we say that now, then we can just tip the scales?
We can just retroactively put Dance of the Mans in. I like it.
All right, next up we have Merfolk Secret Keeper. Like I said, punching above its weight class here. This is the single blue 04 with an adventure for single blue also to have target player mill four cards. And this was really a build around, you know, in original Eldraine, this was the scourge of the bot drafting. You know, this is why this format, I think, is not as beloved by many people. People hate getting milled. This deck was not like a favorite of people's, even though it was, and I think was perceived as definitely the best, and you and I did not feel that way, but you know, a couple of Merfolk Secret Keepers, maybe you've got a lucky Clover to double the adventure and now you're milling eight. You get some Runaway Togethers in your deck so you can, you know, mill them, play your 04, bounce your 04, bounce one of their things, get some tempo play, re-mill, rinse, repeat. Doesn't take that much for you to be able to mill someone out with Secret Keeper.
Literally, Eldraine got the nickname Mildraine because of this card, like in the bot draft days. It was rough times there. That was while you and I were refusing to draft bot drafts. But I mean, this was an iconic card and kind of ruined Eldraine's public perception, to be honest.
I had forgotten, because I love Eldraine so much and I never called it Mildraine, but I forgot that it is like largely referred to as Mildraine. And that's really iconic for Merfolk Secret Keeper.
It's really iconic.
Yeah. Secret Keeper was up against Push the Limit, one of my faves from last year.
Yeah. Push the Limit coming in at the 13 seed. So Merfolk Secret Keeper was the higher seed here. Push the Limit is five red for a sorcery uncommon from Aether Drift. Return all mountain vehicle cards from your graveyard to the battlefield. Sacrifice them at the beginning of the next end step. Vehicles you control become artifact creatures until end of turn. Creatures you control gain haste until end of turn. So there were a bunch of vehicles that had cycling, and you would just cycle, 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 get up 7 mana, cast your push the limit, and win in one fell swoop.
I love this card so much. I definitely voted for push the limit here. This was a really, really sweet card. One that, like, I think took a little while to figure out, like, is this real? Yes, it's real. How do you build it, etc. Burfolk Secret Keeper coming in at 24% versus push the limit at 76%.
Yeah, to see Merfolk Secret Keeper losing so early.
Look, what can you do?
All right, that takes us on to our next matchup, which is Gates Ablaze as the 5 seed, Path of the World Tree as the 12 seed. A good old 5-12 matchup. There's always upsets in the old 5-12 bracket.
Not here, at least. So Gates Ablaze was from Ravnica Allegiance. This was the 2 and a red sorcery uncommon, deal damage to each creature equal to the number of gates you control. And there were a lot of gate payoffs we could have picked from this. These all made an appearance again in Pioneer Masters a couple years ago. But Gates Ablaze was the one I think was the most unique, as you got this sweeper at uncommon, which you just like often don't get. Often your mini sweepers are, you know, or your uncommon sweepers are mini sweepers. They're deal two or put minus, or everything gets -2/-2. And this really could just kill everything depending on how you built your deck.
It's up against Path of the World Tree, which is 1 and a green for an enchantment. When Path of the World Tree enters battlefield, search your library for a basic land card, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle. And you can pay 2 and Wooburg, sacrifice Path of the World Tree to gain 2 life, draw 2 cards, have target opponent lose 2 life. Path of the World Tree deals 2 damage up to 1 target creature, and you create a 2/2 green bear creature token. Some Everything Pizza vibes there.
I was just going to say, Path of the World Tree walked so Everything Pizza could run. Everyone's like, well, multicolor good stuff is the best deck in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I'm like, yeah. Because Path of the World Tree is here.
Everything's reskinned in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Fond of both of these cards. I think about Gates Ablaze more as a build around than I guess I think about Path of the World Tree. But they both require, honestly, less setup than a lot of these aforementioned cards. Like Gates Ablaze is take gates.
Correct. Path of the World Tree is take fixing.
Take fixing, which in Kaldheim, which is where this card is printed, there were the snow duels in every pack, or there were snow lands in every pack, and some of them were dual lands. And so it wasn't that hard, and or in those early weeks, like Sultai snow multicolored good stuff was a really underappreciated archetype, and so you could really make Path of the World Tree work. There was also one of those like land enchantments, like 2 and a green, enchant a land. And it taps for, like, there were just ways that green could fix. We have another card that we're going to see later, Jespera Sentinel, that also helped you fix in green in Kaldheim. So the tools were there, less so like, oh, you really had to make sure you had these specific pieces like some of these other cards.
Yeah, and we see Gates Ablaze taking it down 58% to 42%. I want to talk to the seeding committee. I think these two cards should have been up against Dance of the Mance and Sorceress's Schemes, respectively. One of those got knocked out too early.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're probably right. Unfortunately, the seeding committee will not be taking any questions at this time. Number 6 being Dovin's Acuity, 1 white-blue for the enchantment from Ravnica Allegiance. When it enters, you draw a card and gain 2 life. And whenever you cast an instant spell during your main phase, you can pick up Dovin's Acuity. This is one of the OG, like, as long as I don't deck, I can't lose kind of cards. And so the idea would be this was paired with Clear the Mind, 2 copies of Clear the Mind to shuffle your graveyard into your library, draw a card, and you just like draw cards, gain life, stack your deck again, rinse, repeat. And as long as you don't deck, you don't lose.
That's a fairly high low. I think Dovin's Acuity got done a little dirty there by the seeding committee again. I think that could have been a higher seed.
I think
it's so. It's up against Builder's Talent, the number 11 seed, which is 1 and a white for an uncommon. And it's a saga. Whenever it enters, you make an 0/4 wall with Defender. Level 1. It's not a saga. I suppose it's a class. Excuse me. You pay a white to move it up to level 2. Whenever one or more non-creature, non-land permanents you control enter, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. And level 3 for 4 and a white, when it becomes level 3, return target non-creature, non-land permanent from your graveyard to the battlefield. When you and I argued about this card, you said, what are you going to do with this? And I said, I don't know, but I'm going to do something.
And the truth was, I was going to do something.
You were going to do something.
yeah, this was my favorite card from this set. I just realized I've been sort of like, I don't know, shrugging or my questioning what the flashback sets coming to Arena have been. Like the Artifact remix that has been out this week has been, I mean, it is definitely, caveats, I've been losing a lot playing it. So that is probably also why I'm like, what is this? This set is awful. And then Bloomborough comes back next week. But now I'm like, Bloomborough comes back next week.
Builder's talent.
Maybe I'll get some builder's talents. Yeah, I mean, there just were the tools here. Carrot Cake, I think, being certainly one of them, of like the non-creature, non-land permanents that you wanted to play. But there were like colorless options as well that were pretty good. It was a really, I don't know, it didn't take that much to make this card good. It coming with an 0/4, buying you some time, etc. This was a really fun card.
Yeah, and the winner was Dovin's Acuity, handily, 72% of the vote, as it should have been, I think. Next up, we've got the 7 seed versus the 10 seed. So a little tighter here on the seeding. We've got Fires of Invention versus Essence Reliquary. But the cards, ooh, I love just keep going up against each other.
Two of your faves, yeah. Fires of Invention, the beginning of Ben's love affair with Do Nothing Red Enchantments.
Excuse me, this does so much.
I know it does so much, but like,
it's a long lineage. This was the OG. So this is 3 and a red from Eldraine. And we argued about this in the crash course, and you were vehemently on it being terrible, and I was vehemently on it being broken. And it was, in fact, I think, certainly broken for standard, but I think broken and limited as well, if you built around it. Fires of Invention is 3 and a red, and it lets you cast 2 spells per turn, exactly, no more, no less. Well, you can do less, only on your turn. Only on your turn, yeah. Only on your turn, and equal to mana value equal to the amount of lands you had in play, but you could play them for free. So the turn that you played Fires of Invention, you could play another 4-drop for free. And then after that, you could double spell every turn for the rest of the game, assuming you didn't run out of cards. So the recipe was you needed card draw plus tons of ways to use your mana through activated abilities. So stuff like cracking Wishing Well.
Yeah.
Which is like 4 mana to draw 2 cards. Things like that, you wanted to have that stuff already on the battlefield, ready to unlock, and then you could essentially almost triple spell where you would crack it, draw 2 cards, play 2 things for free, and that was the whole goal. And once you did it, you felt like you were unbeatable. It was really powerful if you could do the thing.
Yeah, the way to like, yeah, the way to make it broken was I get my 2 free spells, and I also have stuff to do with my mana. That just felt like, oh, you're playing a different game. Which is honestly a theme, I think, through a lot of these cards, is like, if you're doing the thing, if you're looping your deck, if you're looping these spells, if you're gaining a bunch of life, if you're casting things for free, you're just doing something different. You're doing something broken that is not often done in a game of regular limited.
Yeah, and it feels amazing, and you're often rewarded with a W.
And then that is versus Essence Reliquary, which I should not be the one. This is another one of your faves. You should be the one to talk about this card. This is 2 and a white for an artifact. Return. You can tap it to return another target permanent you control and all auras you control attached to it to their owner's hand. Activate only during your turn, which is, I think, an important note that it doesn't have to be at sorcery speed, because doing this during combat or whatever was also pretty good.
Correct. Like, this could rebuy sagas. This could blow out your opponent's combat tricks. It made it basically to where you never got while you were attacking on your turn. It could do so much, though.
Yeah. This was your favorite card from MH3, right?
Certainly at the uncommon or lower. I also loved the recurring Nightmare variant. Chthonian Nightmare.
Yeah. This is a pretty close race, but close but clear. Fires of Invention, 61%. To Essence Reliquary at 39%, which brings us to the last 8 versus 9 seed. We've got Roost of Drakes from Zendikar Rising. Single blue for an enchantment. When it enters, if it was kicked, you make a 2/2 blue Drake creature token with flying, and this had kicker for 2 and a blue. And whenever you cast a kicked spell, you make a 2/2 blue Drake creature token with flying. The thing about this card was that, I mean, you had to build around it in that you had to be blue and maybe you would pick some kicker cards a little higher. But like, kicker was a prevalent theme in the set. Blue-green kicker was the thing blue-green was doing. It was not hard for this to do the thing. And this was such a cool like installment of this is like payoff and enabler, because the fact that you could just play this as 4 mana, make a 2/2 Drake with I'll get future Drakes from kicking stuff, made it way more palatable to even take this and put this in a deck that I only have five or six things with kicker in them.
Yeah, this was just very good. It was a build around, but it was like, used to be like, well, you paid a cost for putting this build around in your deck if you didn't pop off. There was no cost.
Up front, you know, like, but this makes the Drake up front.
Very different ballgame. And then it's up against the 9 seed in Wingmantle Chaplain, which is the scourge of Dominaria United.
Yeah.
This is the 3 and a white defender that makes bird tokens equal to the number of things with defender that you control and was tutorable because of the other defender thing that could search up things with defender. It was very redundant and I think ultimately not great for that format, but a very powerful card.
It's interesting that both of these are up against each other because they both sort of break the rules or like the sort of perceived build around rules, which are like Roost of Drakes is like, yeah, but you shouldn't also be able to make a Drake immediately. And Wingmantle Chaplain is like, it doesn't matter when you cast this because I'm going to give you a 1/1 bird for all the walls you have in play. And every subsequent wall you play is also going to give you a bird.
It's all gravy.
Which one did you end up voting for? I have to imagine. Let me check my... Yeah, I voted for Roost of Drakes.
I voted for Wingmail Chaplain. I love DMU.
All right, that takes us to the round of 32, where we've got Spider Spawning as the number 1 seed versus Wingmail Chaplain as, what is it, the number 9 seed?
Yeah.
Very close. 51% to 49%. Spider Spawning just eking it out.
Nailbiter, double overtime in that game.
What's happening in the next one?
Next one, we've got Push the Limit versus Gates Ablaze. So Push the Limit upset from the first round. This is a 13 seed versus Gates Ablaze as the 5 seed. And Push the Limit continuing its Cinderella run, getting 58% to 42% of the vote, and Push the Limit coming out on top in another upset.
All right, then we have Bath Song as the number 2 seed versus Fires of Invention as the number 7 seed. Bath Song again, just squeaking it out at 52% over Fires.
These are some tight matchups here in this round. And the last matchup from the round of 42, we've got Sorceress's Schemes as the 14 seed, getting that upset early over Dance of the Mance, versus Dovin's Acuity as the 6th seed. And we do see Dovin's Acuity carrying strong, putting Sorceress's Schemes back in its place, 59% to 41%.
And then the round of 8, we have Spider Spawning number 1 seed versus Push the Limit number 13 seed. And it's still pretty close but clear, Spider Spawning with 57% of the votes.
And we've got Bath Song versus Dovin's Acuity in the Sweet 16. That's the other matchup. We've got Bath Song, 37% of the vote. Dovin's Acuity, 63% of the vote. Bath Song getting taken down as a 2 seed by the upset from the 6 seed. Dovin's Acuity, you hate to see it. Although there was some generous seeding.
Some misseeding there for Dovin's Acuity, perhaps should have been higher. And a pretty iconic finals here of Spider Spawning versus Dovin's Acuity. Spider Spawning winning out with 59% of the vote.
Wire to Wire is the 1 seed. Almost got upset in the round of 32.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Oh my God. So close. All right. That brings us to the next region, which is Bomb Rares, though category fraud. I did try and keep this rare, but a mythic snuck in. So apologies for that. Bomb Rares, perhaps the most contentious of the whole round, as we will see when we get to it. Kick things off with the number 1 seed versus the number 16 seed. Number 1 is Pack Rat, the Scourge of Ravnica, the tales of 39 swamps and a pack rat. This is 1 and a black for a star, right? It has power and toughness equal to the number of rats you control, and you can pay 2 and a black, discard a card to make a copy of Pack Rat. And in Return to Ravnica, there was not a lot of stuff that killed this on turn 2.
So no, there was not.
You could often just run this out on turn 2, pass, on turn 3, play a land, make another rat. Really tough to come back from that.
And then you were off to the races. That's up against Hostage Taker, which is the 2 blue-black 2/3. And whenever it enters, exile another target creature or artifact until Hostage Taker leaves the battlefield. You can cast that card for as long as it remains exiled, and mana of any type can be spent to cast that spell.
There's a couple. This is Rick's, right? This is Rivals of Ixalan?
Correct.
A couple cards from Rivals in this on this list. And Hostage Taker was a big feel bad. It was a very bomby format, a prince format, as the kids used to say. But Hostage Taker was rough. Like, it was like, whatever. We had not really seen a Fiend Hunter plus Control Magic kind of card packaged in one.
And in true to seeding, Pack Rat as the number one seed, winning handily 86% of the vote. That takes us on to the 2 seed versus the 15 seed, getting the 2 seed in this category. So Dream Trawler, 2 blue, blue, white, white for the... I blocked out what this card specifics are. Too much trauma, I guess, from Theros Beyond Death.
Why don't you pull her up?
3/5, flying lifelink. Whenever you draw a card, Dream Trawler gets +1/+0 until end of turn. Whenever it attacks, draw a card, discard a card to give it hexproof until end of turn, and tap it. What a card.
Yeah, I mean, you really can't. It's really hard to beat this card. If you've never played against it in its format, it's hard to sort of like, obviously you see it, like it can get hexproof, whatever, but you got to discard a card, but it's drawing you cards. There's just it's really hard. You could stave it off for a turn or two, maybe, but you had to win immediately.
Well, that, or you had to flicker Dreadful Apathy, right? There was the pacifism enchantment, and there was a flicker effect. So you could put an aura that made something unable to attack or block onto another creature, and then you flickered it, which then brought it back into play. And then you could auto attach it to Dream Trawler to get around the hexproof nature of Dream Trawler.
Yes. Yes, that is true. Gosh, this was just a heck of a card. This is just
a heck of a card and a deserving 2 seed.
Yeah, coming up against Gruff Triplets from Wilds of Eldraine. This was the 3GGG. 3/3 came in with 2 copies of itself, and then if it died, it would then distribute counters to the other Gruff Triplets equal to its power. So if it dies, then your other two are 6/6s. If the 6/6 dies, then you're getting a 12/12. This one was in my Day 2 Arena qualifier run that got me to my Pro Tour qualification. I definitely have fond memories of Gruff Triplets in my heart. A real grown test of the format. I think that's a very interesting thing about the like rares versus mythics. Like something like Pack Rat, honestly, it for some reason feels, I don't know if it's like more egregious or less egregious when you're like, there weren't mythics in Return to Ravnica. Because some of these you're like, why didn't they make this a mythic? Like Gruff Triplets, I'm like, why is this not a mythic?
Right. You
know? Right. Gruff Triplets, definitely a real feel bad. Like you sort of are like, well, you had to be heavy green. I guess that's the cost of it. But otherwise, not really much work you have to do for this.
But I think another clear matchup, Dream Trawler, number 2 seed, cruising to victory, 73% of the vote.
For sure. Next up, we have the number 3 seed, Umezawa's Jite. Perhaps the seeding committee needs to figure out what they're doing here. Umezawa's Jite, the 2 mana equipment. Equip cost of 2, and when the equipped creature deals damage, you get 2 counters on Jite, which can be used to either pump the creature, give another creature -1/-1, or gain 2 life. I didn't play this original format.
It's so funny. I also did not play this format, but I have, this was at the end of when I fell off my standard playing days. So I have, like, this card was all the rage when it was previewed. I have like 7 copies of Umezawa's Jite in paper because I was like, oh, this card's going to be great. I'm going to have them and then trade them and whatever. But I did not play Limited.
I do know, and Jite is still in Vintage Cube, Powered Cube to this day. It is not the, like, Jite used to be, you know, when Legacy Cube was around, non-powered Vintage Cube, Jite is on the short list of best cards and to pack one, pick one in those cubes back in the day.
For sure. But I also think it's interesting because I think people who played in the format with Jite have some very strong feelings about it. Yes. And we have less strong feelings about it because we did not play in that format. And we did play in the Pack Rats and the Dream Trawlers of it all.
Yes.
So just kind of interesting how all that broke down. It's matched up against the 14 seed Bonnie Paul Clear Cutter. 3 green, blue, blue for the 6/5 from OTJ. It's got reach. When it enters, you create Bow, a legendary blue ox token, power and toughness equal to the number of lands you control. And whenever you attack, draw a card. Then you can put a land card from your hand or graveyard onto the battlefield.
Jite emerging 67% versus Bonnie Paul's 33%.
Gonna be tough to get upsets, I think, in the rare region.
We did get some, not here though, with the number 4 seed Tetsamok Primal Death versus the number 13 seed Breach the Multiverse, off the back of the March of the Machine Aftermath flashbacks. Tetsamok is 4BB, who is part of a cycle of Elder Dinos. 4BB for a 6/6 with Death Touch. You're like, what's the big deal about a 6-mana 6/6 Death Touch? Well, you can pay black to reveal it from your hand, put a prey counter on target creature, activate only during your turn. And then when Tetsamok enters the battlefield, you just destroy each creature your opponent controls with a prey counter on it. It was the most demoralizing feeling on turn 2 or 3 to have one of your creatures get a prey counter. Because you're just like, what do? I just keep playing to the board, and I know that on turn 6 I lose. I don't play to the board, and then I also lose. What do?
You play to the board and you just hope your opponent misses their 6th land drop. It was a heck of a card. As far as like just the reveal, like you knew it was coming. I mean, which was kind of good because then you knew you had to hurry up and like try to get the game over with, I guess. But what a card to play against Tetsamok Primal Death.
This is like up there for my like most feel bad memories of a card. I'm looking at this card and I feel dread in my stomach.
It's a very visceral response to this card. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
It's up against Breach the Multiverse, which is from March of the Machine, which recently had a flashback. It was very very enjoyable flashback time. So Breach is 5BB for a rare sorcery. Each player mills 10. For each player, choose a creature or planeswalker in that player's graveyard. Put those cards onto the battlefield under your control. Then each creature you control becomes a Phyrexian in addition to its other types. We had some questions about this card in the Discord from people who didn't play with it. Like, what makes this a bomb? And oftentimes it was just the mill 10 was just enough. Like, this format was really grindy, and sometimes that put the nail in the coffin. There were also a lot of bombs running around, so you frequently got 2 very good creatures from this in addition to the threat of the mill 10, the deck damage.
Yeah, I mean, this was the set where there was a bonus sheet of all legendary creatures, which didn't have to be bombs, but, you know, the rares were bombs. And so, like, you were getting a good shot at something good. But what you were talking about, a lot of the breaches that my opponents resolved in the flashback week just milled me.
And again, we see the seeding holding true here. Tetsamok is the 4 seed coming in with 63% of the vote.
All right, brings us on to the number 5 seed. Is it too low? Orcish Bowmasters from Lord of the Rings, the 1 and a black. 1/1 with flash. When it enters and whenever your opponent draws a card other than the first card on their turn, you get to amass 1 and deal a damage to something. I mean, Vintage Cube powerhouse for sure. And I guess also Lord of the Rings must be, by proxy, Lord of the Rings powerhouse. I don't remember getting like run over by this card though.
Because it didn't win the game like that. It's much more subtly powerful.
It's subtly powerful. Yeah, that's fair.
It's up against the number 12 seed, Glorybringer, which is 3RR for a 4/4 flying haste dragon that you can exert to have it deal 4 damage to target non-dragon creature.
This was a powerhouse in Triple Amonkhet. And then once Hour of Devastation came around and you were doing like the multicolor green decks where you could both the ways to fix in that format, Oasis Ritualist and Gift of Paradise, let you tap for double mana. So all of a sudden, this wasn't just a red card. You could just snap this up in your green deck. And when you had your 3 ways to cast for double red, you're off to the races to grab this card. This was... I have very visceral memories of this being oppressive too.
Yeah, and why wasn't it a mythic? That was the rallying cry around Glorybringer.
And this is our first upset here with Glorybringer coming in with 59% of the vote. I think I might have been part of this 59%.
I voted for Glorybringer. Bowmasters is a better Magic the Gathering card, certainly on every metric, but it doesn't feel the way Glorybringer felt. Like, Bowmasters doesn't feel unfair.
Another card that feels unfair is Ethereal Absolution, which is our number 6 seed. It's 4WB for an enchantment from Ravnica Allegiance. It's like a double anthem. Creatures you control get +1/+1. Creatures your opponents control get -1/-1. And it also has the ability to pay 2WB to exile a card from an opponent's graveyard. If it's a creature, you create a 1/1 white and black spirit creature token with flying. Again, if you've it's, I mean, if you played like against Elishnorn, the like 4/7 that gives all your opponent's stuff -2/-2, your stuff +2/+2. I'll just say that even when it's one mana less and it's only +1/+1 and -1/-1, it's still really hard to beat.
I think Ethereal Absolution got disrespected here a bit. It was up against Mascot Exhibition as the 11 seed, which is from Strixhaven, which is getting ready to be coming back here. This was a lesson 7-mana mythic rare snuck into the rare category.
Right.
You create a 2/1 Inkling with Flying, a 3/2 Spirit creature token, and a 4/4 blue and red elemental creature token. This was broken because you always had access to it because it was a lesson. Mm-hmm. If you didn't play against Ethereal Absolution, you didn't know how impossible it was to beat.
So backbreaking.
The wild thing is we had Hostage Taker and Ethereal Absolution. You could have also easily put Profane Procession on this list, which is the one, it's 1 white-black for the rare, and you could pay 3 white-black to exile a creature. And then if there are 3 or more cards exiled with it, it flips into the thing that could put the creatures onto the battlefield that you had exiled. And then you could do the really rude thing where you exiled 2 creatures and waited till you had 10 mana and could like double exile the last time because the game had gone on for forever because you had this broken rare.
Yeah. Again, a long line of broken Orzhov rares. Yeah. Ethereal Absolution, pretty busted. Pretty sure this is where I cast my vote. But Mascot Exhibition, given the upset, with 55% to 45%.
All right, that takes us on to our next matchup, which is the 7-seed Fable of the Mirror Breaker taking on the number 10-seed Dion Bahamut's Dominant. We've got a lot of Vintage Cube representation here.
Well, I mean, if it's a busted rare from its original format, it's likely to at least dabble in Vintage Cube, if not be a mainstay. Fable, certainly a mainstay. Dion, I don't think will be that, but Dion from Final Fantasy, the 4-mana 3/3 brings along a 2/2. Your knights have flying on your turn, and then you could flip it into this busted saga that then flipped back. Like Dion was broken, and it's just so iconic for us, and certainly with JMaz helping out here with him drafting two copies of this card to make it to the Pro Tour. It's gonna have Dion be in my sights, and the community seemed to agree with this upset of 55% to 45%.
Did you vote for Dion?
I did. I did vote for Dion.
Wow. I was a firm Fable of the Mirror Breaker stan here.
Fable's like Bowmasters sort of in a similar sense where it's like, it's not as flashy of a card, but it is a like, I mean, even more so than Bowmasters. When it hits the battlefield, you're sort of like, ugh. And maybe that's why like Bowmasters I think of as even more busted in Cube. Because in a normal like Lord of the Rings draft set, you're not necessarily, or draft deck, you're not necessarily like
drawing
a bunch of cards. I mean, I guess with the ring tempting, you kind of are.
You kind of are. Orgish Bowmasters was nuts.
Bowmasters was nuts. Maybe Bowmasters got done dirty, and maybe Fable got done dirty here, but 55% to 45%, Fable out in the first round.
And that takes us on to our last matchup here, which is the 8-seed versus the 9-seed. Valgavas Onslaught as the 8-seed, taking on Morang River Regent as the number 9-seed. I hate Morang River Regent so much.
It's so funny. I hate Valgavas Onslaught so much. Valgavas Onslaught was the XX green sorcery. Manifest Dread X times, then put X +1/+1 counters on each of those creatures. So 3 mana for a 3/3, 5 mana for 2 4/4s, 7 mana for 3 6/6s.
Like, that was a sweet spot.
Three five fives, I guess. The outcry here was not only why is this not a mythic, but why is this single pipped? Why is this single green? Anyone can play it.
Yeah, it's up against Morang River Regent, the 4 blue-blue 6/7 flyer. When it enters, bounce up to 2 other target non-land permanents to their owner's hand. What a dumb card. And if that wasn't enough, you had the buyout clause of Coil and Catch, 3 and a blue, instant omen. Draw 3 cards, then discard a card and shuffle Morang River Regent back into your library.
Sounds like you voted for Morang River Regent there, friend.
No, I definitely voted for Valgavas Onslaught.
Oh, okay. You just have
just
a special,
out of sheer dislike of Morang River Regent.
It's just a special place in hell for Morang River Regent.
I really don't like that card, yeah.
Valgavas Onslaught winning 64% to River Regent's 36%. Which brings us to the round of 32, where we have the number 1 seed Packrat versus the number 8 seed Valgavas Onslaught. Packrat emerging victorious again at 71%.
We've got Tetsamok in a heated race against Glorybringer. So Tetsamok being the 4 seed, Glorybringer being the 12 seed. tight. 51% to 49%. Tetzemach barely edging out Glorybringer. And I think rightfully so.
I voted Tetzemach, yeah. Yeah. Our third round is Dream Trawler. That's the number 2 seed versus Dion, the number 10 seed. Not really close. Dream Trawler with 79% of the vote.
And lastly, we've got Umezawa's Jitte, the number 3 seed versus Mascot Exhibition, the number 11 seed. And the 3 seed cruises into victory, 74% of the vote.
Okay, the round of 16. Packrat, number 1 seed versus Tetzemach, the number 4 seed. A blowout. Packrat with 75% of the vote.
Absolute blowout.
I still voted for Tetzemach.
Did you? Yeah. I think I voted for Packrat here.
Yeah.
I mean, Tetzemach's a good bomb. Tetzemach's a great poster child. I think Tetzemach and Dream Trawler, based on vibes.
Yes.
I think Tetzemach and Dream Trawler should have taken it home.
Yeah, they're on like the most wanted posters that are being put up around town, you know?
And then we've got Dream Trawler as the number 2 seed against Umezawa's Jitte as the 3 seed.
Whoa.
And this was not particularly close. And I think it should have been. I think Dream Trawler got done dirty here. So Jitte won 63% of the vote. And I don't like it.
But I think that, you know, like I said, whatever, it's all subjective. We don't have the memory of this card in its original format. And I'm sure we're going to get lots of story times from people about what a scourge it was. And I believe it. But I think perhaps my judgment of Jitte is tainted by its sort of decline of prevalence
in Vintage Cube.
In Vintage Cube. That I'm like, how bad could this really have been? Which brings us to the finals of the number 1 seed versus the number 3 seed, Packrat versus Umezawa's Jitte. Most dramatic thing to happen in this entire bracket is this is tied. There is no result. The Discord voting was an actual factual tie.
Which means we're the tiebreakers.
Which means it's Packrat.
I mean, I voted for Packrat. Did you vote for Packrat?
I voted for Packrat.
Jitte haters taste it. Packrat, so, number 1 bomb of all bombs.
But there's the other way to say it, which is like, well, maybe our votes shouldn't count, in which case Jitte wins.
Whoa, why should our votes not count? It's our podcast.
Unbiased observers? I don't know. I agree. Our podcast, our rules.
I will say, yeah. In Packrat's defavor also, like, you couldn't mulligan to Jitte. You could just mulligan to Packrat when Packrat was in your deck.
That's true. That's true. You could just mulligan to Packrat. I had a proxy cube, like, whatever, 10 years ago that I used to play with some friends in New York. I took Packrat out because it was not fun. It's really boring to be like, I have all these cool things in my hand. Pay 2 in a black, discard, make another rat.
Yep.
Brings us to our next region. Synergy Commons. Synergy defined what you will. Dealer's choice.
Commons we liked.
Commons we liked. Were they golden eggy? Were they just the best commons? Who knows? First up, the number 1 seed versus number 16, Cryogen Relic, the artifact from Edge of Eternities, versus the number 16 seed, it's just an honor to be nominated, Charmed Stray from War of the Spark, single white for a 1/1 cat with lifelink. And when it enters the battlefield, you put a +/-1 counter on each other creature you control named Charmed Stray. So synergy with itself.
Yeah, famous 8 cat deck.
Famous 8 cat deck, 8 copies of Charmed Stray. Cryogen Relic with, I think, the most decisive victory of the entire bracket, 94% to 6%.
Did you vote for Charm Stray?
I did not. I voted for Cryogen Relic. Did not.
Some lovers of your stream, though.
Shout out to the 6%. You're the real ones. Anything to say about Cryogen Relic, our number 1 seed here?
I am not that big of a fan of Cryogen Relic. I thought it was seeded too highly, and I thought it had a bit too good of a run through this bracket, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. Oh. Well, then I'll say Cryogen Relic's really good.
Cryogen Relic is really good, yeah. But Vintage Cube broke in.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I think, like, yeah, it's just a very... It was innocuous looking, I think.
Was it? We all saw it and were like, this is broken.
But I think I was more hot and bothered in previews about Cryo Shatter, the single blue, -5/-0. Like, so like Cryogen Relic, like, throughout the format, just kept being like, oh, and it does this, and oh, it's cool with this. Like, yeah, I saw the Cryogen Relic on 2 into the whatever the 4 drop that wanted you to sack an artifact to draw a card. I saw that. But beyond that, I didn't see like the, oh, it's like, it just does this and then it does this and you could pick it up and oh, you're just happy to keep a thing locked down. Like, Relic was just real good.
Takes us on to the number 2 seed versus the number 15 seed. Skittering Surveyor, top in the power rankings with the number 2 seed. This is the 3-mana 1/2 that when it ETB'd, you could search up a basic. Versus the number 15 seed, your boy, Sailor of Means, 2 and a blue for the 1/4, make a treasure token. This was, I think, compared to the slaughter that was the 1 seed versus the 16 seed, a much tighter race from the 2 versus the 15. Yeah. I think ultimately the right person coming out on top was Skittering Surveyor, the 2 seed, 59% of the vote.
It's tough when it's a card like Surveyor that's like printed multiple times. Like Surveyor and Dominaria was, I mean, it was synergistic, maybe isn't the right word, but it was so important. And I think it's iconic for me in the realm of like, this isn't the most powerful common or the best common, but it is the common I want to pack one, pick one the most. Like it was the Golden Egg before we had the Golden Egg Award. And Sailor of Means was just a card that I was obsessed with in Triple Ixalan that then actually became good when they reprinted it in Rivals of Ixalan because of City's Blessing as a mechanic. Both of these cards are cards I'm very fond of. I do only have one copy. One of these cards I have art of on my wall, and that's the one I voted for. So RIP Sailor of Means.
RIP Sailor of Means. Went out too soon.
That brings us to the number 3 seed in Talarian Terror versus the number 14 seed of Eye of Malkator. Talarian Terror is the 6 and a blue 5/5 ward 2. Costs 1 less to cast for each instant or sorcery card in your graveyard, originally from Dominaria United. And Eye of Malkator, a podcast favorite from Phyrexia, all will be 1. That's the 2 and a blue artifact. When it enters, you scry 2. And whenever an artifact entered, you could make it a 4/4 until end of turn.
Card still slaps. I smacked some people around in Artifact Remix with Eye of Malkator.
Oh, you played blue in Artifact Remix? Cool.
I've also also smacked some people around with white green, but I have Malkator, just no respect for it. Just runs around the table, and I am happy to hit people with 4/4s.
Talarian Terror coming out with the 72% victory here.
As it should, except I don't love that these two were matched up against each other again. I have Malkator gone too soon.
But I feel like I agree with the, like, when we did the seeding, I would just say, like, I really tried to just seed them and yes. not forecast.
Pay attention,
like,
to matchups. Yes. Yeah.
But I agree. It feels bad to have them matched up here.
All right. That takes us on to the number 4 seed, Virus Beetle, versus the number 13 seed, Clockwork Percussionist. Virus Beetle being the 1 and a black 1/1 ETB discard a card artifact creature. Clockwork Percussionist from format favorite, Duskmourne. The single red 1/1, and when it dies, you exile the top card of your library, and you can play that until your next turn.
In Virus Beetle, you could be like, well, from which set? And it's like, well, honestly, it was great in Edge of Eternities, and it was even greater in Neon Dynasty. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't matter. Card was a house, and synergistic in different ways in both sets. Like, obviously, Virus Beetle, incredible with Ninjutsu, but also really good with the trinkety life that Black had in Edge of Eternities as well. Clockwork Percussionist, also awesome. Loved the monkey. Monkey was a very interesting card for us because the data was super high on it, right? It was like top of the 17 lands charts after day one. And so, of course, by proxy, you and I, or I'll just speak for myself, but I was like, well, this card's terrible. And yep. then once I discovered my love of red-black sack in that format, Clockwork Percussionist is an extremely important piece of that deck.
Well, just red X Delirium. You could be red-black Delirium. You could be red-green right. Delirium. It just did it all.
But Virus Beetle coming out with 2/3 of the vote at 66%. That brings us on to the number 5 seed of Golden Egg from Eldraine versus the number 12 seed of Bushmeat Poacher, 3 and a black for a 2/4 from Ikoria. You can pay 1, tap, sack another creature, gain life equal to that creature's toughness, and draw a card.
Yeah, I mean, both of these iconic cards in their own right, certainly Golden Egg much more iconic, seeded higher, and I think correctly coming away with the win with 78% of the vote.
Should Whisper Squad have been the representative from the Ikoria Sacrifice synergy life?
I wouldn't have hated that. I personally like Bushmeat Poacher as a better card.
Yeah, I mean, tough to vote for anything other than Golden Egg here. Golden Egg, I mean, there's an award named after it. There's not much more to say about it.
Well, and I think people were a little hung up on, like, what is synergy in this bracket in the Discord conversations. This was, synergy with a lowercase s. All right, that takes us on to the number 6 seed, which is Jaspera Sentinel versus a number 11 seed, Forbidden Friendship. This race was close, and I was very invested in this race.
This was one of the first of these. Now we've seen this a lot with, like, Gene Pollinator, and I believe, Sentinel Stalwart from Brothers War, but these single mana tap it, tap another thing, filtering Springleaf Drum kind of creatures. And Jaspera Sentinel was the most iconic limited metagame shift I can think of. The late stage Elves deck that was sort of popularized, Elves sort of written off as a deck, I think, early on in Kaldheim's lifecycle. And then Sentinel and Elves sort of having this resurgence in like week four, or just surgence, I'll say, in week four, or week five of that format. It was really cool.
I mean, somebody called Jaspera Sentinel Mox Diamond with Reach in previous
somebody
seasons.
Somebody did call it that. And his name is Ben Wernie. And Forbidden Friendship was the successor to Golden Egg, right? Forbidden Friendship being the first time after Golden Egg being printed, us being like, oh, this is that. This is a delay the decision, ties a bunch of archetypes together. Good. Like, this was good in the sacrifice deck because it made 2/1s. This was good with Mutate because it made a 1/1 dino that you could free to mutate onto. Like, just did. It was a spell for the blue-red spells deck that actually affected the board. Like, what didn't this card do, you know?
It did it all. I loved Forbidden Friendship, and I hated Ram Through so much in that format. I voted for Forbidden Friendship here.
Ram Through, not a subject in this show note document, just catching strays.
Just catching strays, for sure.
Any mention
as
of
it should, as it should.
Tight race here. I assume you voted for Forbidden Friendship.
I did vote for Forbidden Friendship, and I was very invested in it beating Jaspera Sentinel, and it did. It got the upset. You'll love to see it.
Got the upset there as the number 11 seed. Takes us on to the number 7 seed, Dragonstorm Globe, versus the number 10 seed, Lunark Veteran. Globe, obviously, from Tarkir Dragonstorm, the 3-mana rock in the Year of the Manolith, and also brought your dragons along with the +/+1 counter. And Lunark Veteran, this was Midnight Hunt, right? The 1-mana 1/1.
Yes.
With Disturb. Most iconic for us, I think, because our good buddy of the podcast, Mike Sigrist, just hated this card.
Hated it. And honestly, I thought this card got too much hate in the vote as well. I was expecting Lunark Veteran to win this matchup.
Really?
And it did not.
I do think that Midnight Hunt, in its retrospective and people's memory of it, there's too much of a focus on blue-black was the best deck. When blue-white was arguably the best deck. And certainly in terms of the perspective of like, well, if blue-black's the best deck, blue-white was so underdrafted for how good it was, and Lunark Veteran was incredible. Like, all of your things being 2-for-1s with Disturb was just awesome.
Yeah, but Lunark Veteran getting slayed here by the Globe, getting 72% of the vote. That takes us on to our last matchup, the 8 seed versus the 9 seed. Nutrient Block versus Gold Vein Pick. Two colorless champions battling it out.
Yeah, Nutrient Block from Edge of Eternities and Gold Vein Pick, in my mind, from Kaldheim, though I had forgotten it was reprinted in Foundations. Gold Vein Pick, so iconic to me. Such an iconic synergy card. This is where my vote went.
I love Nutrient Block. I voted for Nutrient Block myself.
We're split. Yeah, I mean, Pick just, it did a lot. Because it, you know, this is the equipment, gives a thing +/+1, and then if the thing connects with your opponent, you get a treasure. And so it's sort of like, is the equip cost free or is it only one because you get the treasure? And there was Battlefield Raptor in that format, the 1-mana 1/2 first strike flyer. And that was best friends with Gold Vein Pick. And then how much did you rely on Gold Vein Pick's treasure production to enable some greedy splashes? Pick was sweet.
Deathsea feeling a disturbance in the force somewhere. What do we think that guy's up to?
I don't know, man. Yeah. We had Deathsea on at the height of Kaldheim. Talking about Gold Vein Pick. That was fun. And Gold Vein Pick winning 61% to 39%. Let's see how the rest of this bracket played out. In the round of 16, we had Cryogen Relic, the number 1 seed, versus Gold Vein Pick, the number 9 seed. Absolute slaughter, 82% to 18%.
I thought this should have been closer. I thought Gold Vein Pick should have had a chance here. I voted for Pick. We've also got a Virus Beetle, the number 4 seed, versus Golden Egg, the number 5 seed, duking it out. Golden Egg coming away with the upset again, 57% of the vote.
Then we have Skittering Surveyor, the number 2 seed, versus Dragonstorm Globe, the number 7 seed. Another upset, Globe coming in with 64% of the vote. Recency bias here?
That's what I was feeling, like there was some recency bias just in the whole experiment.
Yeah.
It's kind of what I was thinking.
Perhaps future March Madness will contain it to the previous year or something.
I think old people bias too, like with Packrat and Jite and some other things. But there was like a gap where Lunarch Veteran, like if a set was like 7 or 8 years old, like those cards just had no chance.
Yeah, guess, that's a good
shot. I guess Lunarch Veteran isn't that old, but there was some amount of
in the middle, if it's like 7 or 8 years old, it's iconic. If it's four years old, you're like, I don't know. I don't really remember it.
Yeah. And lastly, we've got Talarian Terror, the number 3 seed versus Forbidden Friendship, the 11 seed. Terror holding strong, 78% of the vote.
I think I probably voted for Friendship here, but the round of 8, Cryogen Relic, the number 1 seed versus Golden Egg, the number 5 seed. Relic holding strong at 65% of the vote.
Dragonstorm Globe, the number 7 seed versus Talarian Terror, the number 3 seed. Terror holding strong again. 63% of the vote. You love to see it.
And in the finals, Cryogen Relic versus Talarian Terror. Close but clear, Cryogen Relic, wire to wire, gets 61% of the final vote.
I was not thrilled with this outcome.
I'm sorry for you.
Did you vote for Relic?
I voted for Relic, yeah.
Channeling your inner Jeff Probst there. Sorry for you. Gotta take your flint.
That's for you, buddy. That's for you. All right. Last bracket here is Mythic Uncommons. This was fun. This might have been my favorite of the brackets. And I'm kind of sad that we put the number 1 seed in, because I think it would have been a more interesting bracket with it left out. But
I listen, in my original categories, Zenith Flare was in for that reason. Was in the rare and mythic rare bracket.
Zenith Flare punching above its weight class in the busted cards category would have been interesting. Like, how would people have wrestled with Zenith Flare versus Tetsamok? Exactly.
Yeah.
Who knows? But here we have in Mythic Uncommons, the number 1 seed, Zenith Flare, the Scourge of Ikoria, 2 red-white for the spell that dealt damage and you gained life equal to the number of cards with cycling in your graveyard. Versus the number 16 seed from Duskmourn, Sheltered by Ghosts. The 1 and a white aura enchanted with gets +1/+0 lifelink and ward 2. Best uncommon in that set, probably.
Yeah, but doesn't hold a candle to Zenith Flare coming in with 78% of the vote, winning handily as a 1 seed should.
Yep.
That takes us on to the number 2 seed, Lingering Souls, versus the 15 seed, Summon Fenrir. So Lingering Souls, 2 and a white, make 2/1/1 flying tokens, and you can flash it back for 1 and a black. Summon Fenrir, the Creature Sagas, so this is 2G for a 3/2 from Final Fantasy, enters, you can search your library for a basic land card, and then you put a +1/+1 counter on the next creature you cast the following turn, and then Chapter 3, if you have the biggest creature on the battlefield, you draw a card.
Maybe some category fraud. Maybe Summon Fenrir isn't even a mythic uncommon. It's just a good uncommon. It is really hard to like overstate for me how incredible of a card Lingering Souls is.
It's a very good Magic the Gathering card.
Like a card that continues to hold its own in Vintage Cube, which is impressive. But then when you remember that this was printed 15 years ago, 16 years ago in Dark Ascension, if we had data back then, you just can't, like, this would have been the best card in that format. And like, really wrap your head around, because it doesn't look like that broken. It looks good. But then you're just like, why do you have 4/1/1 flyers? And that was 15 years ago.
15 years ago.
It's still broken today. Lingering Souls with 69% of the vote. That takes us on to the number 3 seed. Oh, I love this card. Sand Strangler from HOU versus the number 14 seed of Zoetic Glyph. So Sand Strangler, 3 and a red for a 3/3. When enters, if you control a desert or there's a desert in your graveyard, because some of the desert lands had cycling, you can have Sand Strangler deal 3 damage to target creature. Flame Tongue Kavu that you had to work for, but still a Flame Tongue Kavu.
Still a Flame Tongue Kavu. I have some fond memories of strangling some sand. It's up against Zoetic Glyph, the 14 seed. 2 and a blue, enchantment aura, enchant artifact. Enchanted artifacts, a golem, a creature with base power and toughness 5/4 in addition to its other types. When Zoetic Glyph is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, discover 3. Man, I really just didn't like this format at all.
Yeah.
I just don't even like looking at this card because of how much I didn't like this format.
In Soul, they made In Soul Artifact real good, though. They made it real good. You know, there were map tokens floating around. You could put this on. That was a free way to do it. But there was also just, you know, lots of trinkety things that you could enchant with this. And then it was like a 5/4 that's a big threat that then dies into something that's going to be a spell. That's also a threat. Did not feel particularly fair. Yeah. And
that format being Lost Caverns of Ixalan.
Yes, yes. And Zoetic Glyph coming out with a clear victory of 69% of the vote.
Didn't love this one. I voted heavily for Sand Strangler.
I mean, I don't know how you vote heavily for something. You just have one vote. It's just a vote.
Yeah. But I put my heart in with it, you know.
It's like when people say, like, oh, I'm very pregnant. It's like, well, you're just pregnant.
Takes us on to our next matchup of the number 4 seed, Farika Spawn, versus the number 13 seed in Bolas's Clutches. So Farika Spawn is from Theros Beyond Death. This is, I think, one. Also, speaking of Tetsamok,
yeah,
this is in that category as far as uncommons go of just... Yeah, like totally deflating to play against. This is three and a black for a 3/4 uncommon. Has escape for 5 and a black. So you can exile 3 other cards from your graveyard, pay that cost to cast it again. And it escapes with 2+1/+1 counters on it. And if it enters the battlefield this way, each opponent sacrifices a non-Gorgon creature.
There was diminishing returns on the amount of escape cards you wanted in your deck because they all used the same thing as a resource to come back. Farika Spawn was certainly the best at non-rare, if not one of the best in the set just overall, and had big dread feelings as I remember that card. Versus in Bolas's Clutches from Dominaria, 4 blue-blue for an enchantment. Enchant permanent. You control enchanted permanent, and enchanted permanent is legendary.
These were two absolute titans of their respective formats going at it in round one.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, top of the uncommon power rankings for both, probably, if not the top of both. And Bolas's Clutches just barely eking it out at 52%. Clutches was so interesting because I think when we saw this card printed, we were like, they made Control Magic 6 mana? Why?
Is that still good? Yeah, still good.
It was good in this format. I don't know if it's like always going to still be good. And the fact that making it legendary was often upside because there were things that cared about you having a legendary in play.
I still thought Farika Spawn got done dirty here, though.
I mean, it's about as close as you can get, 52-48, but Clutches emerging victorious. Takes us on to the next round where we have the number 5 seed in Hunter's Talent. The saga from Bloomborough that... was, for my money, one of the most mythic of mythic uncommons versus Ravenous Chupacabra. Flame Tongue Kavu with no upside or with no work to be done. I mean, no downside. 2 black for a 2/2 from Rivals of Ixalan. When it comes into play, destroy a creature.
I have distinct memories with Hunter's Talent of doing a billion day one runs in the Arena Open and never opening Hunter's Talent and just playing against it over and over and over, and it being so demoralizing.
Despite this being the number, was it 5 seed? This would get my vote. I would take this to the end.
Would you?
Yeah. I think Hunter's Talent is, I don't know, and perhaps it's recency bias, but it's not that recent, but like, this is one of the most iconic, like, why does this card exist? Like, how am I supposed to beat this kind of card that I feel like we've had in a while? And this is a close race here, 56% to 44%.
I mean, Chupa Dupes is just such an iconic Magic card.
It is. It is. This whole list, really.
All right, that takes us on to our next matchup, the 6 seed in Elspeth's Nightmare versus the number 11 seed, Kappa Tech Wrecker. So Elspeth's Nightmare is the 2 and a black saga. When it ETBs, destroy target creature power 2 or less. And then the next chapter, you look at target opponent's hand and duress them. And on the third chapter, you exile someone's graveyard. Is that true?
Yep, exile their yard. Elspeth's Nightmare and Farika Spawn, both being from the same set, is crazy because they were like the number 1 and number 2 uncommons from that set.
Where if you hit on Elspeth's Nightmare, like if your opponent played a 2-drop and you were like curved Elspeth's Nightmare in to kill their 2-drop in to look at their hand, it was just game over.
Exile their graveyard in a format with escape mattered because it often meant like, I'm eating one of your escapes. So the third chapter was like you were netting a card, basically. Versus Kappa Tech Wrecker.
The OG Ninja Turtle.
The only turtle that we will be recognizing here on the podcast. One and a green for a 1/3 with ninjutsu for one and a green. And it enters with a counter on it. And when you remove that, I think it's a death touch counter, right? It comes in.
Correct.
It's a death touch counter. You can remove that counter when it connects with an opponent to destroy an artifact or enchantment they control. Similar to Elspeth's Nightmare and Farika's spawn in Theros Beyond Death being like broken black uncommons back to back. Like Capitech Wrecker was in pretty good company with Blossom Prancer and Besager Reaches Skyward. Like green was stacked at the uncommon level in that format. Capitech Wrecker was the representative here.
Yeah, and very, very tight race. Elspeth's Nightmare coming away with a W, holding its own as the sixth seed with 57% of the vote.
Takes us on to 7 versus 10. We've got Imidane's Recruiter as the number 7 seed from Wilds of Eldraine. This is like when I imagine what the data would have looked like for Lingering Souls, I think about the data for Imidane's Recruiter, where it was just like the fourth best card in the set overall. This is 2 and a red for a 2/2 when it comes into play. Everything you control gets plus +1/+0 in haste, and it has an adventure for 4 and a white to make 2/2s with vigilance versus Benslayer Angel.
Benslayer Angel, Seasoned Hallowblade, 1 and a white for the 3/1, and you can discard a card to give it indestructible and tap it until end of turn.
Yeah, Iron Shield Elf before we had Iron Shield Elf. A blowout here for Benslayer Angel. Imidane's Recruiter getting 88% of the vote.
But yeah, rightfully so.
Rightfully so. But I think worth just noting for people who don't know, why are we calling it Benslayer Angel? Because Baneslayer Angel was in the format with Seasoned Hallowblade. And we had some
which,
real
which
like,
is if those people don't know this, they also might not know Baneslayer Angel, which is 3 white for a 5/5 flying first strike
lifelink
protection from demons and something
and dragons.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the like OG bombs from, you know, whatever 2010 Magic that came back, and we were like, is Seasoned Hallowblade a better pack one pick one than Baneslayer Angel? I believe, in my memory, we came to the conclusion that
it was, and then LSB dunked on me savagely on Twitter.
I mean, I think it's, like, ultimately, I think we were all like, it's actually close. Like, whether it's Baneslayer over Seasoned Hallowblade or not, it was close, was my memory
correct
of it. And but yes, we came on the side of the hot takes. This was maybe the spawn of our hot takiness.
All right, that takes us on to our last matchup in the first round, which is the 8 seed versus the 9 seed. 2 blue bangers here battling it out. The 8 seed Stock Up versus the number 9 seed Invasion Submersible.
2 blue bangers from 2025, bookends from Aether Drift and then from Avatar. In my mind, Invasion Submersible was again the clear best uncommon in Avatar. Was Stock Up the clear best uncommon in Aether Drift? I don't even know if it was.
I don't know if it was, but one of these two cards is in Vintage Cube. So Stock Up is 2 and a blue sorcery. Yeah. Look at the top 5, put 2 into your hand. It's pretty busted in Vintage Cube.
But that doesn't necessarily, like, that's your barometer. You're so Vintage Cube pilled. You're just like, is it in Vintage Cube? Is it good there? Then I'll vote for it. I came out on the side of the sub here because of how it stacked up in its format.
That's fair. And I think it sounds like the viewers, the listeners agreed.
The Discorders agreed. Yeah, 59% of the vote for Invasion Submersible. All right, let's round things out here. The round of 16, Zenith Flare is the number 1 seed versus Invasion Submersible is the number 9 seed. Not close. 80-20. Zenith Flare only getting more powerful, gaining 2% in this matchup.
Yeah, that takes us on to the next matchup of In Bolas's Clutches, an upset from the first round, which is the 13 seed versus Hunter's Talent as the number 5 seed. Hunter's Talent cruising to victory with 70% of the vote. 5 seed going strong.
Lingering Souls is the number 2 seed versus Imidane's Recruiter as the number 7 seed. A close race here, but Imidane's Recruiter edging it out in 55% to 45%.
This is absurd. This should have been Lingering Souls versus Zenith Flare in the finals.
And this was also crazy. Zoetic Glyph as, what was this? The number 14 seed versus Elspeth's Nightmare is the number 6 seed. This was decided by one vote.
Thank the Lord. I was one of those votes.
I also was one of those votes. It was 50% to 50%, 51 votes to 52 votes. Elspeth's Nightmare.
All right, that takes us on to the Elite 8, where we've got the number 1 seed, Zenith Flare, 78% of the vote, versus Hunter's Talent, the number 5 seed, 22% of the vote. Zenith Flare continuing to cruise.
Absolute domination. Makes me sad. I voted for Hunter's Talent in this round. And then we've got Imidane's Recruiter versus Elspeth's Nightmare. Elspeth's Nightmare just edging it out in the last round by one vote, not even close in this round. Imidane's Recruiter with 82% of the vote.
How did Lingering Souls lose to Imidane's Recruiter?
I don't know.
In the finals, that takes us to Zenith Flare, the 1 seed, versus Imidane's Recruiter, the 7 seed. Was a bloodbath as far as seeding goes in this, yeah, in this region of the bracket.
Yeah, I think this was the lowest rated card to make it to the finals. I'm just going to scroll up and make sure that's true. Yeah, Dovin's Acuity was the 6 seed. Recruiter's the 7 seed, making it to the finals here. But Zenith Flare, again, 77% of the vote. I'm just going to put you on the spot here.
Give me some matchups. What's coming out of each region against what?
We'll put a common and a rare against each other, because I know this is going to be easy for you. You want Cryogen Relic versus Pack Rat.
I choose Pack Rat all day, every day. Get out of here, Cryogen Relic.
I guess I don't care. And then Spider Spawning versus Zenith Flare, the 2 uncommons battling it out.
That's so hard for me. I love both of those cards so much. I just have so many fond memories of Zenith flaring people out in Ikoria. But Spider Spawning, like, I loved drafting that the first time around. I loved drafting it the second time around. I won $2,000 in the Arena Open.
Oh, yeah.
When in the Spider Spawning format, drafting back-to-back Spider Spawning decks and just drafting my butt off in both those drafts also. I don't know, man. I got to pick Zenith Flare if it's me picking. Which it's going to be unpopular, I know. It's going to be unpopular.
That is unpopular. Zenith Flare versus Pack Rat.
I'm going Zenith Flare. I'm given the winner of March Madness.
You live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
I love Ikoria. I love Zenith Flare. I think it made that format better. That's my take. I'm sticking to it.
I think no matter what, for me, Spider Spawning wins this bracket, wins this whole March Madness. Just like, I can't think of a card that is more, and obviously it's of a time for me of like, Innistrad was like sort of the height of my like, on ramping back into Magic, and like when I was living in Chicago after college, and it's just the most like, when you think build around uncommon, when you think like something cool for limited,
you think Spider Spawning. You're right. I it should be Spider Spawning. I love Zenith Flare so much. No, though
you're already, you can't walk it, I'm back locked. People are already in your DMs. You're done, you're cooked. This was fun. I do think I would like to do this again next year, and I think maybe we'll rein it in, maybe we'll do a bit more keep it more recent so that the recency bias of it all doesn't play a part. But this was very fun.
Yeah. Great walk down memory lane.
Next week, Strixhaven previews were coming for you.
All right. On that note, thank you as always to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all our content at lordsoflimited.com. There is links to our episode backlogs, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, our Patreon page, if you want to check that out. All of that is available at lordsoflimited.com.
Do you know the week I was off with JMaz when you recorded with Charlie and Samp, I hadn't listened to our intro and outro music in a long time. You know, when you were editing, you listened to it every week. Our outro is such a bop. It's so good.
It really is. Yeah.
Shout out to Salty Pretzels. If you've got any feedback about the show, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
And here it comes. Here comes that outro music. Thank you as always for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.